Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people from all walks of life to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week's guest is Dr. Nick Segarelis, whose expertise is in physical medicine and performance therapy. If you're struggling to overcome injury or just want to feel healthier, Dr. Nick will share expert insight on how to improve your physical, spiritual, and emotional fitness. Next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Nick. Thanks so much for joining us on Common Denominator.
Thanks for having me, Moshe. It's a pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about your approach to health and well-being.
Well, as a chiropractor, I'm practicing physical medicine. I end up utilizing any type of modality that I have at my fingertips to make people feel better. The first thing and the most important thing is to figure out what people want, whether they want to move better, sleep better, think better, eat better. That's what I'm there for.
So I know you also have something called the four pillars.
And yes.
I think that that seems to be your mission statement when you have any patient. Tell us a little bit about the four pillars.
The four pillars are sleep, nutrition, mindset, and movement. And I want to bring it back to stress, first of all. Stress has to do with a continuous demand placed upon the body. And when we don't have health, we don't have the ability to adapt to those demands. And the different stressors, I call them five stressors, and they are biochemical, environmental, psychological, emotional, and physical. And we're constantly bombarded with all these five stressors on a regular basis. And so when somebody has ill health or they fall ill, it's because they've had too much of one or all of these stressors hitting them at the same time. And in order to be as healthy as they can, what they need to do is ensure that those four pillars are present so that they end up having that ability to adapt to those stressors.
Yeah, so let's break down each of those four. Let's start with your thoughts on sleep, because I know all of the old people, one third of their life is in their bed sleeping.
It is something that unfortunately for many, many years, people, especially healthcare professionals like myself, we try and get as little sleep as possible, thinking that it's a badge of honor to be able to be at your best with the least amount of sleep possible, which I think is starting to change over the last little while. What you said, that a third of your life is spent in bed, that is correct. The optimal amount of sleep would be 7.5 hours. At least that's what all the research says. But the problem is that people don't have good quality sleep. Their sleep is disrupted. They're unable to be comfortable in bed. They have pets or children that disrupt their sleep. And it's during sleep that you end up getting rid of a lot of the toxins in your brain. You're, for all intents and purposes, defragmenting your brain and allowing all the different parts of your brain in that day to go back to normal. In addition, what also ends up happening is that's when your growth hormone is released, so that you're actually getting repair of all your tissue that you've damaged throughout the day.
It's amazing to realize that the body in a restful state has the ability to rejuvenate and heal itself. And it may even sound funny, but something as such like a pillow. I know that when we travel, my wife's like, don't forget the pillow, because, you know, that's the pillow that she got used to. Or we go and get an organic, specific type of mattress. And I say, I still say that's a great investment, because it sets up your foundation to how you go through the rest of the day.
I often get questions from patients that end up inquiring about, you know, what kind of mattress should I get, Dr. Nick? And I would say, well, it has to be comfortable, but you also have to consider what type of body you have. How you sleep comfortably. Are you a stomach sleeper, a back sleeper, a side sleeper? Do you have small hips? and a very broad shoulders, you'll need a different type of bed than if you have very wide hips, a little tiny waist, and broad shoulders. All these different factors are extremely important to understand the type of bed that you have, and then also the type of pillow that you have. So if you're a side sleeper and you have broad shoulders, you're going to want to have a bigger pillow. If you have a very narrow neck and a big cranium, then you're going to want a pillow that's going to cradle your neck and not allow your head to kind of drop over inappropriately.
So it's interesting. And then I think about the next pillar is really the nutrition, because one fascinating fact is 70% of our energy is spent on digestion. So tell us about a little bit about nutrition.
Nutrition is a very interesting thing because a lot of people, they mistaken diet for nutrition. So diet is essentially how and what you eat. Nutrition are the cofactors that you end up getting through the diet that you consume. So you have to think about the nutrients, the macronutrients and the micronutrients. So the macronutrients are what everybody thinks about as fats, carbohydrates, and proteins. Whereas the micronutrients are the really important components. They're the vitamins and the minerals that you're continuously consuming. And if you don't have the appropriate minerals and vitamins, your sleep can sometimes not be as beneficial as if you are getting the right type of foods into your body. And food has a big emotional component to it. So things have to taste good, have to feel good. And different types of diets are more appropriate for certain individuals. So if you are an individual that has a child, for example, that might be getting seizures, they've shown that these children are best managed with a ketogenic diet. But as an adult like you and I, having a ketogenic diet for a prolonged period of time, it can be detrimental to our long-term health.
I know my wife is she studied health counseling, and one thing she said, take it one step at a time. When we first were dating, I would drink Coke and Sprite, and she said, okay, trade that in, see how long you can trade that in for water instead. Just one thing. Because I think the audience, you know, you have, again, the habits and rituals and the way you live your life. So if you want something to stick, I think it's take it one step, do one thing that will be manageable and lasting.
Especially if you're trying to do a lifestyle change. But if you're trying to manage a specific condition, sometimes you have to be a little bit more dramatic. So if your digestion is very disrupted because you're eating foods that unbeknownst to you, you're intolerant to, there's a term called oral tolerance. So there's some individuals that might not be able to consume wheat, dairy, and perhaps sugar at all the same time. So having a dessert might not be good, but if you separate them and you have them individually, that might be able to be tolerated. Now, that being said, when you're looking at making lifestyle changes, sometimes drastic changes are good. Because it also teaches you that you're capable of making these changes.
Sure. And I love the, one of my favorite prongs also is the mindset pillar.
Yep.
The brain is the greatest tool, and it could be your best friend or unfortunately your worst enemy. Maybe you have some, I guess, I like to say life hacks when it comes to mindset.
So the mind hack is, I think, finding time for a growth mindset. So seeing how you can actually learn from every single situation that presents itself, as well as finding time to be mindful. So taking that time to actually be present within yourself and understanding what you want. And also surrounding yourself with positivity and positive people. If you don't have that positivity around you and have the support that you actually need or find the support, then I don't think you can actually achieve that. So mindset as a whole has a combination of, you know, having intention and attention, which is something that we talked about before. Having the desired outcome, so your goals, and that would be your intention, right? But sure. Being mindful and being attentive to everything.
And I want to emphasize your other point you made about there is no failure. It's really, really learning experiences. Mm-hmm. We're going through life. If we can have the mindset of, let me take the best out of this experience and learn from it and grow from it, that is a tremendous perspective. Not easy, but the more conscious of it we are, I think the better. Now, the fourth pillar is also pretty important, is movement.
Well, that's really what my wheelhouse is, right? My wheelhouse is understanding how people move and ensuring that I can help them move at their best. And that might be offering a different type of physical modality to allow them to get the movement and the range of motion in a particular joint. And that could be something as simple as they can't bring their arm overhead and they want to be able to exercise, or to the point of a professional athlete where that professional athlete identifies themselves as moving. It could be athletes like, you know, a 27-year-old law student that I saw yesterday that used to run track at a university in the U.S. Unfortunately, she wasn't managed appropriately and is dealing with a lot of foot and lower extremity complaints. But this gal, unfortunately, can't do what she wanted to do. And because she can't move the way that she wanted to move, no longer can she identify as being an athlete, which prevents her from being able to sleep well, which makes her have bad food choices, because there's a lack in belief that she can accomplish what she was able to accomplish. So she ends up seeing a spectacular performance coach who's a psychologist that helps with her performance anxiety. But also, we need to get her to be able to trust her body, to be able to move well.
What's your thought on this, on psychology of pain?
Well, I'm not an expert in the psychology of pain, but what I do know is that pain is present for our body to provide us with an understanding that something's wrong. When you have pain, those four pillars actually have a huge impact on it. Because if you don't sleep, you're going to have more pain. If you don't sleep, you're going to make bad food choices. And then that's not by choice. These bad food choices is because your insulin it has changed in terms of how it works on all the cells. You want very high sugary food so that you're able to absorb energy really, really quickly. So you're going to be picking the chocolate bar as opposed to the nice salad. You're going to be picking the chips that are really calorie rich and get you a real big jolt, as opposed to the nice veggies that have been steamed with the really good quality rice. And you're actually going to not make good choices because your brain hasn't actually processed things appropriately. So you're going to be fatigued. And then when you try and move, you're going to have bad movement patterns. And this is why I go back to these four pillars and why these four pillars are so important. They end up, unfortunately, making us not make good choices. And these are physiological components.
So if we wanted to take actionable steps starting today, right now, what would you say, let's say using these four pillars, what are actionable, practical tools that people can use that you would advise?
First, it's sleep hygiene. So sleep hygiene means that you're going to bed at the same time every single day. You have a ritual, whether that ritual is reading before you go to bed, journaling before you go to bed, praying before you go to bed, having a positive, thought-provoking conversation with a significant other or a friend, staying away from any type of electronic for about 1 to 2 hours before you're time that you've decided is time to go to bed. And the optimal time is around 10 to 11 o'clock. Not eating about 3 hours or 4 hours before you go to bed, not consuming caffeine 12 hours before you go to bed. I would say that would be the first thing. And you want to make certain that that bed is comfortable. It's a cool environment. There's no light and there's not going to be any disruptions. Your sleep hygiene, paramount.
Sure.
And then it's nutrition, ensuring that you're getting the adequate amount of multivitamins and or vitamins and minerals, ensuring you're getting the appropriate amount of essential fatty acids. When you wake up, taking vitamin D to improve your overall hormonal health and your immune health, taking vitamin C and taking probiotics. You want to get good quality proteins in there, whether they're animal or plant-based proteins, nothing processed. Try and cook your food when you eat. Do not eat with a device on. Do not eat with distractions. Really be mindful. Almost use it as a meditative practice to chew your food and digest it.
And you were saying about the mindset, about the action step, because I do want you to touch on that before we wrap.
I think it's two components. The first component is, there's a saying that when you're pointing a finger, there's three pointing back at you. So before you end up engaging in negative language and negative thought, because thought becomes actionable, right? Sure. It becomes true. Try and look at positivity. Think about things in a positive light as opposed to a negative light. Look at yourself as the conduit of change and positivity. And I think a big component is implementing some sort of meditative practice. And if you can do it twice a day, that would be the best. Start with 1 minute, 1 minute of mindful breathing. If you can do 5 minutes, wonderful. That's where the mindset component comes into play, with deep breath work and gratitude.
Sure.
And then the last part is movement. Movement, it ends up opening up your body. It allows you to breathe better. And if I were to say, if you were to pick one movement practice, it's very simple. You can go online, take the spiritual component, religious component out of it, if that's unless that's something that you desire, and just do something called sun salutations. Sun salutations allow you to open up all different parts of your body. They're safe for the majority of individuals to do. Sure. And all they are is just stretching all the different parts of your body while you breathe to allow you to actually open up your body. And then walk. Walking is one of the simplest, easiest movements that the majority of people that are able-bodied can do.
Sure. Well, I want to really thank you for joining us in Common Denominator. It's really been insightful. And if people want to find out more about you, how would they do that?
I've got two ways of contacting me. It's 180 Health. It's spelled ONE80Health.com. Because I think everybody can make a turnaround to their health. And then the other one is Dr. Nick, DRNICK.CA.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Nick, for joining us.
Thank you very much, Moshe, for having me here.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Next week, my guest will be internationally renowned mentalist Guy Bavli. Guy's known as the master of the mind, so prepare to be inspired and amazed. Until then, have a great week and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.